Why is it, do you think, children are always too young to hear the truth, but never too young to be lied to systematically, conscientiously, in the name of education?
This is Teachers for Class War on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. Listen online at freakradio.org.
Yes, very
so,
busy.
So we're here in the studio with me, Ariel,
and I'm Jessica.
Jessica and Daniel.
Hi, Jessica. Hi, Daniel.
And also Sasha, who may or may not be participating in the interview. So both me and Jessica just received our layoff notices last week, as you know, new teachers. And I guess just first of all, we're curious from what in a nutshell, what are you seeing from your side of things in the last week?
I just left a meeting of about 100 teachers at the Salinas Union High School District who have all received various forms of notice that they are not invited back next year, and it was. It's definitely a very stressful and difficult time. I myself, in the region that I work in, am probably going to have about 500 actual layoffs. And for every layoff of a teacher, this is a teacher layoff, for every teacher layoff, there's at least three what I call silent layoffs of teachers. Because the only people who are entitled to a legal layoff hearing are teachers who are probationary or permanent. Teachers who, for various reasons, are called temporary, they are the silent layoff. They just get evaporated without any rights or any due process. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing lots and lots and lots of people who it is proposed that they will lose their jobs. And that doesn't even cover the classified employees, because that will all start in April, because they only have to give 45 days notice to classified employees. And there will be hundreds and hundreds of them in this region that get laid off, too. So it's pretty bleak.
Can you talk a little bit about the causes of this issue? Some people are saying that it's really a state or federal level issue. Other people are saying it's mismanagement of funds in the district. Can you talk a little bit about, from your perspective, where this all is coming from and which are the more dominant reasons that this is happening?
Sure. Well, there's a couple of issues. Obviously, the economy is awful, and in California, funding for education is based on two things. Partly, it's based on property taxes, and we've seen, numerous foreclosures, and so the property tax basis and the value of property has gone down. So that lowers the revenues to the state. Also, there's the issue of income taxes. We've had lower revenues of income taxes because of less work. And a number of things. I mean, it's very complicated. One of the issues is that when Google stock was sold, there was a huge amount of profit made off of that, and that created a lot of taxes that went to the state. So when the bubble of the economy created a lot of wealth for the government that it doesn't exist in times like this. So partly there's no state funding. The state funding has been diminished. And most of the districts that we deal with get their revenue based on state funding per child, per average daily attendance of a student. So that's part of it. Now, in some districts, though, they have not been good stewards of the public money. So on top of this diminishment of funds from the state, you've got the lack of supervision of funds at the district level. And that's created this perfect storm. So there are districts that are not laying anybody off. The Gilroy Unified School District has had no layoffs and has pledged to have no layoffs. The Pajaro District last week gave over 250 layoff notices. So,
is that 250 including the categorical or other position? Okay.
Yes. Now, that doesn't include temporaries. We still don't know about the temporaries, which I assume there'll be a few hundred temporaries, but this was everybody who was noticed last week that they were being considered for layoff. So, you know, you can only look and say, you know, has the Gilroy District been able to have better long-term planning than the Pajaro District does, for instance?
And is it, I mean, is it purely an issue of long-term planning? Or, I mean, are the demographics and, I mean, is the population similar? Like, what is it that Pajaro couldn't just, you know, look over, what, 30 miles away and say, oh, those guys really seem to have it under control for the last few years? Like, why is it that Pajaro would not be in a similar condition to them?
You know, I think that you'd have to ask the administration, but my sense is that they have not had the... that district is enormous. The Pajaro District is huge. It's got about 18,000 students.
Mm-hmm.
The Gilroy District has about 5,000 students. And in the county of Santa Cruz, Pajaro is the largest district in the county.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that district grew, and the level of adeptness of the administration and the quality of the administration didn't grow with the size of the district.
Interesting.
And so I think that you've got people, you know, still running the mom-and-pop store when they've got mega corporation there now.
Mm-hmm.
That's my estimation.
And with Salinas, I mean, where are they at in all of this? You described a little bit about their situation, but in terms of their situation, are they quite comparable in size and in other aspects to Pajaro?
The size is similar. The demographics is, I mean, Pajaro, let's face it, Pajaro is you know, a number of demographics in one district.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the north zone. There's three zones in the Pajaro district, for people who don't know. There's the north zone, the central zone, and the south zone. I've taken to calling them myself the white zone, the mixed zone, and the brown zone. But you've got the Aptos, La Selva Beach zone, which are primarily more affluent students in Pajaro. And then you've got the central zone and the south zone that have a demographic of less affluent students and more English language learners. In Salinas High School District, an enormous number of not well-to-do students and English language learners, students, mm-hmm. kids from backgrounds of not speaking English. But this is a high school district in Salinas.
Okay.
As opposed to you guys are a K-12.
Mm-hmm.
The layoffs in Salinas are the adult ed program. They've noticed everybody in the adult ed program.
Wow.
Everybody in ROP, which is vocational education. And a large number of counselors, because some of the counselors were being funded by grant money that probably will not continue. But they've also laid off tenured counselors as well, people who actually were in regularly funded programs.
So
it's very, you know, each of these situations is unique. I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Jessica?
Oh, I was going to ask, there's this, you know, federal money that people keep talking about coming through. Do you think that, how many of these layoffs do you think are, or do you get the feeling are actually going to stick for next year?
You know, if you knew the answer to that, you'd be rich. the federal money that's going to come through is primarily geared in a couple of places. One is special ed, because the federal government and the state have not fully funded special ed in schools, and special ed is a mandatory service.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be cut. It has to exist. So this is going to come from the feds in one-time money that's good for 2 years for special ed. So it's unclear, you know, you can, personnel is an ongoing cost that recurs year after year. So will we be able to save some jobs with this one-time money? We hope so. But it's not clear because it's not going to be recurrent money. So that's that. The jury's out on that one.
Will that be clear?
Well, we have preliminary numbers from the feds about how much they're going to give, and I believe in Pajaro it's close to $4 million they're going to get between Title I and special ed. The money, the Obama administration is doing everything it can to immediately rush this money to the states, and we're putting pressure on the state to immediately rush it to the districts. I think we're not going to know till probably the end of April, beginning of May, and final layoff notices have to go out May 15th.
Okay.
So it gives us this window to hope that jobs will be saved by those funds.
And are there conditions attached to that money?
There are conditions, but, you know, I'm astonished at how it's, it's just changing every second. So I'm not clear what the conditions are going to end up being. One of the conditions was that it could not supplant existing money. It was supposed to supplement existing money. But I think because of the dire state of the economy and the funding to schools, that it will end up actually supplanting and not adding to the program. It will be money that helps save the program. It will not extend the program.
So you were mentioning the different zones, and I certainly experience and concur with what you were saying.
Yes.
Do you see the layoffs and the cuts to education disproportionately affecting those zones in Pajaro?
Well, I'm not. You know, I really don't know. I don't know yet. We haven't got the data to see exactly where the layoffs are going to be in Pajaro and what's sticking. My estimation is that the Pajaro district did this enormous number of layoff notices that you guys got as a way of pressuring the union into taking pay cuts on behalf of the employees. And so I don't know how it's going to affect the different zones yet, because I see the initial layoff notices in Pajaro as really being a political ploy. And not, I mean, the employees, unfortunately, are pawns in this game right now.
Mm-hmm. Is the administration taking any pay cuts?
They say that they are taking pay cuts. They say that management is taking, I think, 5 furlough days. A furlough day means it's the day you don't work and you don't get paid. Mm-hmm. And they said that they're also taking another voluntary, I can't recall, it may be as many as 10 days. But we don't have anything in writing and no proof. And I do believe that the administration in Pajaro will be taking some voluntary cuts. I do think they are doing that.
What I understood from Dorma Baker's update today, she sent out an email to all the PVUSD email list, and what it sounded like to me was 15 days that they were taking a cut of 15 days, or what they were calling a cut of 15 days, but I'm not sure that that's actually what's going on, because 10 of them are optional work days, so they can work them and get paid if they want to, and then 5 of them were furlough days, as you were describing.
Right.
So it sounds to me like 5 days that are cut, and then where you had an option to work and get paid, you don't have that option anymore, but it's not as if they're taking 15 furlough days.
Right. I believe you're absolutely right, is that these are not mandatory days that they have, and they're not losing them. That's my understanding. You know more about this than I do, that part of it.
Only as of 3 hours ago. Yeah.
I will tell you that my biggest frustration with the Pajaro district at this point, there are two things. One is competence in some issues. For instance, a lot of the layoff notices that went out on Friday were illegal layoff notices. We're going to be litigating whether those notices are even valid, because by law, the layoff notice is required to give people 7 calendar days to request a hearing. I don't know if the notices you got, but some of the notices that people got were dated the same day that they asked people to return the hearing request.
Yeah, I received my layoff notice on the 15th,
uh-huh.
Which is the day that I had to return it by. Or no, I think I had to...
The 13th. The 13th. You probably got it on a Friday, and they were expecting you to return
exactly.
it on the
That's
13th
what it was.
As well.
Right.
Yeah.
And that is illegal, because it's clearly in the education code, part of the law, that you have to have at least 7 days to respond. So, you know, this is like, here's more money out the door for the Pajaro district. We're going to be spending money litigating whether those notices are even valid under the law. You know, our position is going to be they have to be thrown out because they're invalid.
So there's something that I've been thinking about for the last, 2 years since I was in Oaxaca, Mexico.
Yeah.
Where the teachers were occupying the central square, were rioting, were completely... We're taking it upon themselves to
basically shut down
to show ungovernability,
right?
To the government,
yeah.
In order to get changes, because their classes, you know, they were in the streets because their classes were reaching 30 students.
Mm.
They were in the streets because the kids, you know, didn't have adequate, meals or textbooks. And
yes.
things that just translate so clearly into what we're experiencing now. And from your perspective, why do you think we can't do that? Why do you think that we as teachers haven't realize that it's time to be in the streets yet? What's holding us back?
Well, certainly you women are out there, and I'm really proud of you, and I'm so glad that you're doing that. You know, it's a generational thing. I mean, there is, from my time, we were used to protesting in the street about things. I mean, when I went to law school, the year before I started law school, there were no finals at my law school, which is an amazing thing if you know law school, because it was the bombing of Cambodia by the United States. And the students at my law school stopped the college from giving exams, final exams. Everybody was passed that year. So we had, as students, a sense that we could stop things this way. I think that people have grown up in a time when it's been marginalized, demonstrations. And I think that the teachers, new teachers, are no different. And the older teachers, frankly, at this point, are so concerned about maintaining their, you know, they have families,
retirement.
They have homes, they have children, that it's become a different time. You know, we just haven't seen that kind of spark in this country yet. Frankly, I mean, this isn't something that's exactly on this topic, but I think what the Obama administration is doing right now is rescuing this particular economic system, because if they hadn't come in, I think there would have been rioting in the streets. But, you know, now they're trying to save this existing economic system, so I don't know, but I hope that you guys go for it, and I hope you are successful. You know, at this rally, I don't know if either of you were there on Friday in Watsonville.
Yeah.
You know, there were a few hundred people, which was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I think, one thing that Arielle might even be referencing is that, I mean, there's mobilization to wear pink. There's mobilization to put a little pink slip in your window.
Yeah.
To get together in Watsonville, but how threatening is that? You know, how much does that make, I mean, your word was ungovernability.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Not really what that shows. What that shows is we're really ticked off and gosh darn it, you know,
we're
still
ticked
off. I'm
going to wear a pink shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't carry the same weight as, you know, a strike or any other number of actions that could be taken.
Well, and you know, in California education, to be able to strike as an educator, there's a process that you have to go through first, because
mm-hmm.
when the collective bargaining law started in the late 70s, early 80s, it was an attempt, really, to prevent, to govern educators, as you say. And you have to go through negotiations and impasse, which means a mediator comes in. And then if the mediator says you can bring in somebody who's called a fact finder, and you go through this process, then finally you have the right to strike. So there, you know, in terms of the legal apparatus in California, it certainly discourages strikes. It makes it a very hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, we need to assess who we're dealing with clearly. And I know that there are a number of teachers in the Pajaro School District, some who may be listening in, who really disagree with us on this and really feel that the unions should be agreeing to pay cuts, that it's more important to maintain the services for the kids. If the adults have to sacrifice, that's okay. So we don't have a unified 100% group here that's willing to do that.
I definitely heard that a lot in a union meeting that I went to, or not
yeah.
in a union meeting, but in a teachers' union meeting.
Yeah.
People were saying things like, well, we don't want to give up this because if we, you know, for example, if we don't show up to work, then we've broken our contract and therefore we don't have benefits and some of our friends depend on those benefits. And so we don't want to, you know, we want to make sure that if we're acting in solidarity, that we're not screwing over our own people's health or various other, you know, the children
yeah.
are an obvious one as well.
And
yeah.
also there's, you know, like I know that some schools right now are working to rule, and you have to think about that too. You know, yeah, you're showing that you're just like what a difference it makes when you just work your contract hours and, you know, how, you know, kids, that affects the parents more, and then they, you know, start to be a little bit more checked in about what's going on, but that affects the kids. You know, then kids aren't getting their homework graded, and, like, you know, just everything stacks up, and in
mm-hmm.
the end, it's still that weight is on the kids' shoulders.
Yeah.
And it's just such a fine balance to play in the teaching profession.
I absolutely agree with you. I was at a Santa Cruz school board meeting a couple of years ago. The teachers in Santa Cruz were doing a work to rule, and there were students there at the board meeting begging the school board to resolve the issue. I can't remember what the contract dispute was then. Begging them because they couldn't get recommendation letters
exactly.
from their teachers to go to college. So because there's a work to rule, absolutely, I agree with you. It's a very powerful tool. The problem is that in PAHRA, we really need to get when the issue that unifies the teachers comes forward, it will be a very powerful force. But right now, I don't think that the entire faculty is unified yet.
Mm-hmm. I'm also really curious. I mean, it seems like by this point, you know, things have been getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And from what I hear, it's like, you know, people reference years in the past and they always say it's never been this bad. And I feel like I've heard that from public school teachers before.
Yeah.
So I worry that we're on this downward trend. And I wonder if, you know, nationwide or worldwide, there's a labor organizing model that we can reference that doesn't harm the kids, but does hold the administrators accountable.
Well, you know, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, who's just this incredibly impressive woman to me, she's been working towards what they call community schools. And she's trying to get the school not only to be the education center, but for it's kind of like years ago there was this Healthy Stars? Anyway, in California, but the idea is that it would be a center for community, the school, and that you would have all these services, because as you know as teachers, it's not just the education that's the issue for some families. There's a mm-hmm. whole bunch of issues, and to make them a central place. That's what Randy is trying to do, and I think it's a brilliant idea. And, you know, we're trying in different ways, in different locations, in different places. You know, one of the difficulties is that the local control of school districts, there's 1,000 school districts in California. So it means that we need to organize in each one of these districts, and there are different kinds of communities with different values. I agree with you. I think it's a great idea. I think we haven't found yet the paradigm that's going to work that will stimulate people in all of these different circumstances.
Mm-hmm. We need to make teaching a threat again.
Yeah.
Teachers a threat.
Well, yeah. I mean, in this odd way, I always toss this theory around that the worse the conditions get for teachers, the more radical teachers you get, because you aren't there because you want to just coast by. You know, if you're looking for money in an easy job, you would go to a cubicle somewhere or some other job that's less intense.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, what we always say, something like that, is where we say that a bad administrator is the best union organizer.
Right. That's very true, actually.
I mean, you know, where we get 100% union membership is when there's a bad administrator. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And being an administrator is a really difficult job. I mean, I will say that. But, you know, we're looking for educational leaders, people who can... somebody said something recently that I hadn't... You've probably thought about this before I have, but that the term principal mm-hmm. came from the concept principal teacher, that it was the lead teacher, not this separate entity.
Interesting. Huh. I like that.
Yeah,
I
definitely heard conversations very recently about how principals and assistant principals can forget who the teachers are, and they forget what it's like to be a teacher and how quickly you lose perspective and lump all the teachers together and just mm-hmm. say teachers have these problems, in much the same way that teachers will look at students and say students have these problems.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. You know, I think personally, in terms of getting our way out of where we are right now, there's a couple of things. We need to increase taxes in the state. I mean, people in California are used to getting services for free, basically, and not having to pay for them, and that's important. I mean, there are people who just really hate taxes, and I say, who's going to create roads if you don't pay taxes? So, but they like the roads, you know. So I think that's part of it, is that we've had one of the lowest tax rates in the country, and when the economy hits in the way it does, we have no money for schools. So, mm-hmm. you know, the fight isn't really district by district with the administration. Part of the fight is to change the consciousness in the state, that we're willing to have people pay their fair share of taxes. As you guys probably know, the compromise that ended up on the state budget, at the last minute, it shifted all the taxes to the lower paid. Because Abel Maldonado, Senator Maldonado, State Senator Maldonado, who represents a lot of the Monterey Bay, you know, insisted on changing the tax increase.
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, it lowered the taxes on the wealthiest. That's a real problem we've got, because we need to pay for it. We need to pay for high-quality teachers. We need to have classrooms that kids can learn in. You know what that's like much better than I am. You guys are in that classroom. We need to have good books, and we need to have good support systems for that. And that takes money. And until we in California are willing to pay for that, I see us being in this constant spiral.
Yeah, I mean, looking at all the cuts that just got made last week, like, I try to imagine what, like, I felt like everything last year and the year before, it's just been so bare bones.
Yeah.
It's like now we're, like, down to, you know, half of the bones that we had last year, you know. It's just like, yeah. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like with, you know, with less. We had a nurse once a week for a couple hours, you know.
Yeah.
Now we're going to have a nurse for, like, 20 minutes, you know, every 2 weeks or something. I can't even imagine what that's going to be like, you know,
right.
Like increasing class size in kindergarten and third grade is just, I don't know. It's
taking away one of the best things we had. I mean, in
yeah,
my
exactly.
opinion.
And yeah. I'm astonished that Pajaro actually put on the layoff list for speech pathologists. I mean, that's a shortage field. Nobody mm-hmm. can get enough of them. So I don't know how special ed students are going to get speech services if these layoffs stick. It's
right.
very difficult to understand. I heard about a district today, I can't remember which one it was, that actually asked teachers for next year if they would bring in toilet paper because they would cut that out of the budget.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, it's things like that where it's like, okay, what is holding us back from, you know, camping out in front of the state capitol? Like, what, it's just...
Right. Why are we not chartering buses? Instead of putting money
did.
Into supplies and toilet paper,
yeah.
why are we not chartering the buses?
Well, there was actually a big rally today in Sacramento,
oh, that's
and there
excellent.
Were buses chartered.
Good.
And people from all over the state went up there for a rally that the union that I work for, California Federation of Teachers, put on. So there was a rally. And there was something, I believe, last year where there was a sleep-in outside of the office of Mike Vilnius, who's a Republican from Fresno, a Republican legislator from Fresno, and there was a sleep-in outside. So people are starting
That's
in a small
good.
Way to do things
we
like
need
that.
More of that.
Can
yeah.
you tell us a little bit about the effects of those two actions?
Well, today, I don't know yet what's come out of today, so we'll find out about the rally today. Vilnius, you know, frankly, he didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He kept fighting against the state budget. You know, part of the reason why we're where we're at is because the state budget took so friggin' long to get done.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, that sleep-in did not encourage him to change his mind. He still voted against the state budget.
You got to find his home address and sleep outside of his house. Just going to take a little step farther. Come on, kids.
Right around his car.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Ms. Stonebloom, we're counting on you with your experience from Oaxaca to teach us.
We need to bring some of the Oaxacan teachers here
yeah.
and train
yeah, right.
us. Consultants.
Activist trainings.
So, yeah, it's a difficult thing, and, you know, I feel like there is a generation of children who are basically going to be lost by, as you were saying, if we increase class size in those early grades, those children will never make up the deficit.
Nope.
We're writing off a whole group of kids who are going to get through the whole system without what they need, and it's tragic.
The question for me is, I mean, I used to work at a private school. Actually, I used to work at two private schools. How do we get people who are super wealthy, who are paying higher property taxes, who have the money to give, to be convinced that they need to sink money into public schools when their children aren't going there and they're, you know, speaking out the traditional Republican, well, you know, we're not getting the services, so why should we pay for it?
Yeah. Well, I don't think that we can convince them, but I think that if we can go out and organize the voters to stand up and to come together and to vote for higher taxes, then those people will be the minority. Let's face it, we know that the wealthiest people in this country are the minority.
Mm-hmm.
They control all the money, but they're the minority. So if there were a consciousness among the voters who could actually change that
mm-hmm.
in terms of laws and funding, we could do it. That's what we're working on doing.
Do you have any more questions?
And, you know, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting the way that Obama is approaching some of these questions. You know, I'll tell you, from my perspective, part of the problem with California schools is that health benefits for employees have skyrocketed. And it's because the entire health benefit system is hostage to the insurance companies that make the profit off of it. So if we could get single-payer insurance, in the state or in the country, that would free up so much money they could serve children and pay employees.
That's true.
The benefits, health and welfare benefits, I represent employees in a district where in 1 year the premiums went up 25%, and that was for Kaiser. That's a lot of money that's being eaten out of education. If we could get control of the healthcare system, if we could put that all into a single entity, it would save schools so much money. It would be there for kids. We're basically taking public funds and we're giving it to insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important point to make.
That's a huge amount of money. I think people forget is, you know, could be in schools.
Yeah, and we think that employees deserve good health and welfare benefits. We think everybody deserves them.
Right.
Not just employees, but, you know, I represent employees. And now that is one thing that if anybody is listening in who got a layoff notice, one of the only bright lights I can say is that under the recovery, the Federal Recovery Act, American Recovery and something, ARRA, if you are laid off, your benefits will continue, and the employer has to pay 65% of the cost of them for 9 months.
Of the COBRA. That other percentage, though, is still a huge chunk of money.
It's a lot of money, that 35%.
But that's a huge help.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. It's been wonderful.
It's been great speaking with you all, and I wish you the best, and we're going to be fighting to keep your job. So
thank you so much.
Yep, and we'll probably see you on Wednesday.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye. You've been listening to Teachers for Class War.
So that was Pat Lehrman, who was just talking to us from Teachers Union in Pajaro. And we're going to be listening to some Nina Simone.
We're going to be listening to some what?
Some Nina Simone.
Things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday we'll get it together and we'll get it undone. Someday when the world is much brighter. Someday we'll walk in the rays of a beautiful sun. Someday the world is much lighter.
Ooh, child,
things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday we'll get it together and we'll get it undone. Right now.
to never tell a lie, to look you in the eye and tell it like it is. Always thought that you would be the same. It's such a shame that's not the way it is. I was fooled by your innocence, and my love for you is so intense. Was our connection only physical?
Joan Jett. You're listening to Teachers for Class War. We're about to play a little bit of audio that we tried to get on last week, and now I hope we're going to be successful with it. This comes from one of the district's board meetings, where I've heard numbers usually right around this, that there were 400 people inside and at least as many outside, or at least half as many outside. That's the range I've heard. So a good 400 to 800 people who came out. They organized a barbecue out front, so people were getting fed. And there's a lot that you'll hear about this. This is the same meeting where the bathrooms weren't opened until 45 minutes afterwards, as what I would call a dispersal technique, among several other things, like the speakers not working, them closing the doors to the building so more people couldn't come in or hear or see what was going on. No translation of documents, agendas not passed out to the outdoors, even in English, until the very end of the meeting. Yeah, nothing at all was translated that I ever saw. And yet some of my students came to me and said, "Ms. Bender, you were at the thing." So that was kind of exciting. In any case, that's what you're going to be hearing. And then towards the end, if there's time, I'll give some little snippets of my day today, both funny and disturbing.
My sign says no more cuts to education.
Si quitan más maestros, imagínense qué va a pasar.
Charter, and we're here because we think it's really unfair that they're doing this. If they want to cut money, they should stop the work.
And it says, God feature, don't be a fool, don't cut money from our schools, and that's our sign.
Everybody, we're all a little concerned about the way the district's being run, and so we're here to voice our opinion.
How long have you been a teacher in this district?
8 years.
Okay. And what sorts of things do you think they're going to cut first?
Well, they said they're going to cut nurses, all nurses. They're going to cut the counselors. I don't know how they're going to do the counseling next year, but they're not going to have any counselors. The custodial services are going to be cut back. There's talk about not having any summer school. And, boy, I could go on and on. That's all I can think of off the top of my head, but it doesn't look good at all.
I think it's time for the higher up, higher paid in the district, you know, like superintendents and the administration, to start taking their share of the cuts. I think the cuts have been enough with, you know, classified and certificated, and it's their turn now. You know, the economy is bad. We've done what we can, and we're pretty much as far as we're going to go in what we can take as a cut. It's their turn to take the cut, and and that's all I have to say. No more cuts to education.
Hi, my name's Sarah. I'm here because my brother is going to Aptos High, and he is involved in a lot of stuff, and I believe to be a part of this, just to know what's happening with my brother's school.
Here because we have a problem in our schools. You know, they're cutting off of our counselors, they're cutting off of our school system in general, buses, counselors, nurses, libraries, stuff that really, really does affect us. Most of the majority of people who are here are from migrant parents. And these migrant parents speak Spanish. They don't speak English. And so when we go to a meeting like this, we're expected to get the full amount of this meeting, you know, speaking English, the translation of the papers that they do, all of this stuff. They knew in advance that we were going to have more than 400 people, and they chose a very small location. And so because of that, now we're standing outside. We're yelling. We're demanding our rights. We're demanding that they let us in. We're demanding that the kids go inside and sit somewhere where they have to sit because they're annoyed, they're cold, they don't care. And then this lady shows up and tells me that I have to shut up because I'm already here. We're protesting, we're demonstrating, we're saying, you know, cut to the top. Don't cut at the bottom, because when you cut at the bottom, the way that this system works is by having educated people. They won't do that crap in Aptos. They will never do that crap in Aptos, but they're doing it here in Watsonville. Why is that? Face the reality, this is a minority community. I don't like the word minority, but that's what they call us. This is the area where you least want people to get educated. We are here because we are protesting the budget cuts that they're doing. We're protesting where they're deciding to cut these cuts. They're deciding to cut them from the bottom in the buses, counselors, teachers, libraries. If you cut teachers, then we're going to have a class with 40 students and one teacher.
I'm a teacher. I can tell you I had 50 to start the year.
That's
literally
a lot of
50
students.
We didn't have enough chairs. We already have janitorial service coming into my classroom like twice a week.
So I believe you.
I'm with you. I know 100% what you're talking about.
They should cut at the top. Maybe they should cut some of the school board members that are there. Because I saw them and they're useless.
What do you know about the school district and the representation of Latinos in the school district here?
Well, we have some people who have represented us now. We had the elections coming up, and I know Karen Osborne is one of the community members who really supports her community. She has a lot of students that are here, and then, we also have Sandra Nichols. Those are two people who are always on our side, who are always for the community, who are always for their students, who are always there to look for a better future for the community and their students. So I know those two people are definitely there always to count. The rest, I don't know. They're very biased when it comes to their decision. We really don't know where they're standing when it comes to the final decision of where they're going to be standing with us and the community.
I just want to comment, if they keep cutting, you know, not even only transportation, other necessities, the school needs that the librarian, the nurses, our teachers, especially in our district, the education our kids is already not too good. I don't want to say low, and I don't want to offend any of the teachers, but we're going to need more teachers, and we're going to need more people around our kids so they can have a better future. Lo que más me preocupa de los recortes que está haciendo nuestro distrito escolar es que nuestros niños se van a quedar cortos de educación porque se van a quedar con menos maestros, más alumnos en las clases. No van a tener librerías. ¿Qué van a leer? Es algo muy importante y no quiero ofender a ninguno de los maestros, pero necesitamos más maestros porque la educación en nuestro distrito escolar es baja. Ya es baja. Y si quitan más maestros, imagínense qué va a pasar.
Teachers for every one administrator, but 30 students for every one teacher.
That's a good one.
I started the year with 50 students in one of my classes, 10 of whom were RSP kids, so it's even above 30. It's way above 30.
Way above 30.
Yeah. In fact, above legal limits in a lot of cases.
And I guess the one last thing for me would be the level of disrespect and hostility towards teachers that's directed from district level administration, that they will never ask a teacher what they think. They'll hire a consultant, for example, to get a computer program to test kids.
One of my frustrations is that things get reported in the paper, and especially since the trustees have a voice for writing these editorials, that they say things, for example, that they, last time we had cuts, they made the first cut, and that was supposedly that the new deputy superintendent position was eliminated and they saved all this money. But nobody ever reported that the guy is still sitting up there tonight. No money was saved. He wasn't let go because he had a contract. But Leslie DeRose and Kim Turley reported several times how they had made the first cut. You know, they took the first hit. He's still there. I don't understand that, and I'm frustrated by that. I'm frustrated that now they're saying, you know, come on, employees, step up. I need to see them step up. I need a good faith effort. And I have yet, in my 21 years of working for the district, I've yet to see one, and I need one now.
Our sign's in Spanish, but in English it says, keep cuts away from students.
We're in support of the Parra Valley Unified School District employees. We're bus drivers. There's several of us here. We're concerned about the cutting of the bus drivers, their routes. If they cut routes, a lot of children are going to suffer because they go out of town. It's not just in-town transportation. And I found out today that we have 2,000 mainstream special needs kids that are on big buses, and they're trying to pretty much cut out big bus drivers and keep the special needs. But where are all those 2,000 kids going to go?
Okay. So what effect do you think this is going to have on kids really specifically?
I think school, the population and the school size, they might go down. They might get discouraged, not want to go to school. You know, some of them might have to walk a long distance to school. knows?
So it might not be worth it for them?
Yeah.
And can you tell me about the effect on the employees? How are you guys all doing?
Well, as it is, the economy's bad, and we lose our jobs. A lot of us pay house payments. You know, we might lose our houses, too. We're concerned about our children, families. Yeah.
No more cuts to education.
Hi, I'm an educator, and I have friends who are educators in Pajaro Valley Unified School District. And I went because I like to support education. I've gone to school board meetings for years to help support teachers all over the state. And there were some things about this particular meeting that I thought were good and useful, and there were some things about this meeting that I thought were very much a warning sign and really red flags for me. Here are some of the things that I thought were good. There was a large number of people there. There was a lot of diversity people there. There was families that were there. There were older people. There were younger people. There were kids playing on skateboards outside. And there were people who were really trying to be active in their community and make things better for themselves. And it was really great to see that. Some of the things that were of concern to me, one was is they didn't open the bathrooms until about 45 minutes after the meeting started. I don't understand why that would be the case. It was the room was packed and there were people waiting outside, so it would have been very difficult for anybody in the meeting to have left, waited through a big crowd of people, and then go find the bathrooms down the hallway. Another thing that was of great concern to me was is that all the proceedings that I heard were in English. There was no translation into Spanish. And I find this particularly worrisome because this is a community where a large number of people speak predominantly Spanish or feel much more comfortable listening to complex issues in Spanish. The school board again made a decision to make this meeting be in a venue that was too small. The previous meeting was being held at the district offices there in the towers, and I've been to that the room, and it's a small room. It only holds like 50 people or something. And more people showed up on this particular issue than the last meeting, and so they had to close it down. And so the next meeting they were going to have at a bigger space, but again the space was too small. And there was people waiting on the outside. There was throngs of people on the outside. The only way I could hear was as they had some loudspeakers that were set up on the sides, but you had to be right underneath the loudspeakers. And you had to wait outside in the cold and listen, and you couldn't see who was speaking. And some of the people who were closer to the doors wanted them to open up the doors so they could actually see. And they were yelling and asking for the doors to be opened and asking for the doors to be opened. And it seemed like it took about half an hour or 45 minutes of asking the guard and asking the people if they could have the doors open so they could at least be outside in the cold but watch the proceedings until finally they allowed the doors to be open. I think in some ways this is really metaphorical. It was a very small little gain that was done by the activists on the outside. And all they wanted was just to have the doors be open so they could see what was going on. They could see these people who were saying these things about how much money there was going to need to be cut. And the size of again and again, I don't know a whole lot about this district. I know a little bit about it. But there's things that the people in the district office do, the school board makes choices, that I don't understand. I don't understand the lack of Spanish. I don't understand the not opening the bathrooms. That seems like a pretty good way to get people, especially with kids, to leave early. These are people who are elected by the community, and they're supposed to serve the community. They had it again in an environment that was too small. The previous school board meeting was being held in the school board district offices, and it's just a small little conference room. I've been there. It's got enough room for like 50 people in it. And there was so many people there at the last meeting that they couldn't hold it because too many people showed up. So they said, oh, we need a bigger space. So they went to this space, which when I finally got a chance to look inside of it over people's shoulders towards the end of the meeting, only held a couple hundred people. And I thought to myself, look, the school district has lots of places where they can hold meetings that are a lot larger. Why are they continually choosing to hold meetings in places that are too small for the numbers of people who are showing up? And then, you know, your cynical mind could go different places and think that maybe they were deliberately trying to keep people's voices from being heard. I didn't see who was saying this because I was outside. But I did hear somebody report about a study that was made of 30 school districts around California. These school districts are very similar in size and demographics and issues to here in Watsonville. And there's two things that were very interesting. One is that teacher salaries ranked 30th, that is last. And the amount of money that was collected for students was third, which means that there was a lot of money coming in, like disproportionately all this money coming into the district per student. But for some reason, the teachers were being paid 30th. So these are the kinds of issues that the school board really does need to address. People are asking questions in reasonable, thoughtful ways. The school board needs to show responsibility to the citizens by actually addressing the concerns that are being raised. If everything's on the fine up and up, then they can give a good answer. And if it's not, well, then people should know.
No, tell me what's going to happen when I eat this.